Today's show is brought to you by AdvanceAutoParts.com. Save 20% off your first order at www.AdvanceAutoOffer.com/chickenduck. Enter promo code AAP20CAST for 20% savings.
Life is short.
I don't recommend even bringing this up theoretically.
To me, when you give your word and you have the ability to go, you can't let fear, you know, step in your way.
What bomb did you drop on her? How are you, Case?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Not too bad. Just you and I today, huh?
Yes, sir.
Welcome back, everybody. Saturday's with Chicken Duck, episode 99. 98.
99.
Well, then what's Kyle doing?
Kyle will be here, episode 101.
Why can't we ever just have a normal time conversation? Like, I don't get it.
What are you talking about?
It's just that everything's binging. And
it's very normal.
Oh, completely.
This is episode number 99.
If you were to ask me about Saturdays with Chicken Duck, I would definitely say 100% normal. Completely normal. Everything about it.
This is episode number 99. Next week for episode 100, Kim Cavana, our number one patron. Patron.
Kimmy.
Kimberly Cavana Curlin
will
be on
because
she is our number one Patreon. And we'll be joining the raffle, the giveaway for the 100th episode. Go to chickenduckpod.com to sign up for that.
That's exciting.
Got one more week, Kyle. And then on episode 101, we'll have Kyle on and we'll present him with the belt because he won the Just Say November challenge.
So we've already decided the winner.
Well, yeah, the challenge is over.
No.
It ended November 30th.
Can I get anything for being the first one out?
Yeah, big old loser stamp.
That's fine, I'll take it. At least you would have remembered that.
So, as you may have noticed when I walked down here.
Can we have to talk about that after we have our guest, because I have too much to even discuss with you. I just want to take it from you and beat you with it. You're not intimidating me at all. You would remind me of an older person that lost a little bit of weight through the month of November. Everybody, he's holding this Evel Knievel cane. Number 12?
This is number 12.
Oh, you took the... oh, boy. Officer. That's funny. It all makes sense.
Pretty
now.
Cool now, isn't it?
It all makes sense now. Hey, there, that guy walking through the airport's got another one of them Evel Knievel canes. So that's something. Well, what is there anything that that holds? Like, can I put all my crushed up pills in the top part?
No. But
this part. What, you got something weighed on out. Oh, the cane gods have eaten that. Well, when you
hold on,
tilt it back down, it probably.
Give me one.
Do we have to go outside to see how it works? It's not gonna like a blade's not gonna shoot out of the end like some James Bond. Fuck. It's why? Why? I didn't know Evel Knievel was into smuggling drugs.
He wasn't, but he was into doing shots of wild turkey before he did his jumps.
Wow, that's amazing.
I didn't have any wild turkey.
Did
to
those
put
come
in
with it?
Oh yeah.
Oh my god.
When I first got it, I only thought it had one end, right? So that's what I've been using, and it actually came with a, like, you can actually use this as a cane. It came with like a rubber stop.
I would hope so.
On the bottom of this,
yeah.
So I was like, I wonder what's under that rubber stop. So I took the rubber stop off and unscrewed the bottom, and the other four glass flasks fell out of the bottom. So, yeah, pretty cool, huh?
That's something.
I posted the picture on the Evil Knievel. It's called Everything Evil page on Facebook. And Evil Knievel's sister, Loretta Young, she wrote that her brother actually carried six vials in the cane, which this one only came with five, which leads me to believe that Evil might have been a little longer.
Or maybe the flasks were smaller.
Possibly. But thought you might like that.
Sharp. That's amazing. I don't know if it's as amazing as the last like 3 weeks of your life being dedicated to it and all things Evil Knievel, but I'm all right with it, I guess.
Well, Jim, we're getting old.
I thought it was pretty funny when I sent my condolences to you for your tragic loss midweek.
We are getting older. Eventually, I will need a cane.
I've needed a cane as recently as a couple years ago.
Well, if you would have had this one, not only would you have shots of wild turkey and or...
Other things
in your flask, in your cane, you would have been all right.
Pockets. I mean, I've always had pockets, but that's okay. That's neither here nor there.
Right. Pockets will get you caught. Hollow canes might not.
Might not is right. You're right. Always a step ahead of Johnny Law, buddy. That's what I love about you. I'm taking December off of the old alcohol, as I usually do.
Why?
I like to give myself a month to clean up.
That was what Just Say November was for.
I don't follow your rules. I do my own thing. I'm a nomad.
You're a fucking nomad, all right.
Hey, this is Ben from BS3 Sports and Music, and I'm proud to be a part of the No Phony Podcast Network. Visit our website at nophonynetwork.com to be on top of all the great shows and follow us on all of our social media sites.
On the phone with us today is American motorcycle jumping world record holder and stunt performer Doug Danger. How you doing this afternoon, Doug?
Doing great. Riding down the road here in Florida.
Nice, nice.
We're in wet and cold Pennsylvania.
Well, I spent the whole summer up there doing shows and rained out like 60% of them, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's been raining here nonstop, it seems like.
I watched a couple of videos of you jumping in the rain. What are you... What? Like, is that a normal practice for you? I don't even like to walk outside in the rain, let alone ride a motorcycle up a hill and then shoot off the top of the hill.
Well, when I'm jumping my dirt bike, you know, my Honda, you know, it has the dirt tires on it, and it's made for running in the dirt and the sand and the mud and everything. And I have special special paint on my ramps that is has a lot of traction. You can't, like, when it gets wet, it's not slippery at all.
Like almost like a gritty paint?
Yeah, it's almost like you put it on the decks. I throw sand in the paint, but there's a special kind of paint. Like an oil-based paint has, like when the water hits it, it just runs right off. It's extremely slippery. When you use a latex-based paint, it has a real rough feeling to it, and it's not slippery at all. After 40 years of motorcycle jumping, I've learned a few secrets.
So how did you get into motorcycle jumping? I was watching a couple of things and reading up on you yesterday a little bit. Were you at the Las Vegas Evil Knievel jump? Is that true?
Yeah, that was kind of the beginning for me. I was only like 5 years old. I was up on my dad's shoulders, and I saw Evil Knievel fly through the air. And, you know, my mouth was wide open, and I saw him land, and I saw him start to disappear behind the crowd. I heard everybody screaming, and all the people around us were saying, "Get your kid out of here. That's not good for him to see." You know, they were saying that to my father. And my father puts me down, and he says, "Doug, are you okay?" I said, "Heck yeah, Dad, but you know what? I think I could have made that.
Yeah, those people were right.
And that was the beginning of Doug Danger.
That's awesome.
So you were five then. When did you get your first motorcycle?
Well, I started jumping bicycles shortly after that out in the yard. I used to live in Las Vegas. And my parents got divorced. I ended up moving back to Massachusetts. And back then, all they had was a Schwinn bicycles. They didn't have the BMX bikes and everything that they have today. So we were out there setting up ramps and jumping over other bicycles and stock car tires and jumping people. We were jumping everything, you know. And we ended up in 1979 was my very first motorcycle jump. I got my first motorcycle for my birthday when I was 11 years old, and I used to ride the wheels off it. It was a little Suzuki TM75, and nobody could keep up with me in the trail, like not even close. We used to take off in the trails, and my brother raced motocross, and we would take off, and I get to the end of the trail, and I'd sit there waiting for him. You know, it was about 4 miles in the trails. I get to the end, and I'd sit there waiting for him with my helmet off, my arms crossed when he got there, and I used to say, "What took you so long?" And everybody used to laugh. Then when we were jumping up in the sand pits, I used to be able to jump so far. I used to watch the motocross riders and learn how to use the rear brake in the air, use the throttle on the landing to bring the front end up and spin that rear tire. And I was able to jump my motorcycle almost twice as far as anybody in the sand pits. Nobody, I used to explain it to everybody how they were doing it and how I would do it, and they didn't understand it. And they would just say, "Oh, he's crazy. He's nuts. Watch how far he jumps." And eventually continued, jumping in the sand pits. And then in my junior year of high school, I got the carpentry class to build my first set of motorcycle ramps.
Nice.
And we took them out in this field that summer, and I ended up jumping over 10 cars.
Imagine the liability lawsuits today if that would happen, Doug. You imagine the amount of lawyers that would be in your presence in your classroom the day that you came up with that idea?
I can tell you one thing. It's there's a lot of things holding kids back
today. Hell yeah.
You know, it's a shame because we sure had a lot of fun when we were kids.
That's
we got
what I'm
hurt
saying.
Here and there, but you know, that first jump I did on those ramps was 10 cars. I went a little long. I got knocked out, but I got back up, and you take your bumps and bruises and you either continue on and head towards becoming a champion, or you quit and you just back out and choose another career. But at least you tried to do it, and that's always been my idea on things is, well, let's see if we can figure out how to do this and do it right, and if you can, let's give it a whirl. Sometimes if it's a world like a world record jump, it's never been tried before, so you're in an unknown territory, and it gets pretty scary when you get out, as far as I have a few times on this motorcycle in the air.
Yeah, I would think that lighting yourself on fire and then driving anywhere on fire, let alone, off of a ramp over, a bunch of cars on fire. Dude, that's freaking crazy shit. Are you an adrenaline junkie outside of riding the bikes? Like, is it something that you always just have all, you just need that drive? Or is it just you love the bike,
Well, I've always... See, when I grew up, I saw Evel Knievel jump the fountains. And then after the fountains in Caesar's Palace, Evel Knievel became a household name. And I loved not just the action of jumping the motorcycle, but the whole persona of the whole situation of what he represented. Our country at the time was in a terrible situation with our vets being, booed and spit on and everything else when they were coming back from Vietnam. And Evel Knievel changed the thinking in America about let's be proud to be America again. And I loved the feeling that was going on and what he was trying to say, that we are the best damn country in the entire world. Quit your bullshit and let's get back to being proud of who we are. And he changed the thinking in America, not just for a year or two. He changed it for an entire decade. And he became my hero, and I wanted to be, I loved what he represented. I wanted to be just like that. And it was a situation of never let fear hold you back from trying to obtain something that creates success in your life or creates a positive thing. And be proud. You have to be proud of where you're from, because if you're not, there's there's goddamn plane tickets all over the place that can get you out of here if you don't want to be here.
Go somewhere else. You're damn right. Yeah, I'm right there with you. Hey, I know you're a cancer survivor as well, aren't you, man? You're tough. You're one tough nut. Yeah. Like I was reading some shit on you, and I'm like, man. So,
I don't like to lose.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah. So, you want to talk about that at all? I mean, I don't want to delve into your personal life, but
absolutely, because I spend a lot of time on the internet with I have a whole lot of followers.
Sure.
That, you know, friend me on Facebook, and I read a lot of times about people that have cancer, and you know, things don't look very good for them. I just had one recently, and you know, I become these people's friends, and they understand that when you've been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, it's a real tough pill to swallow when the doctor says to you, you have 3 to 6 months left to live, get your things in order. And in the next words out of their mouth are, do you have a will yet?
Yeah.
You know, when they say that to me, I'm like, hold on. I'm still trying to digest what you just said. You're telling me that, hey, this was in January. You're trying to tell me in June I'm going to be pushing up daisies out of the ground?
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm sorry. And it's like, look, I'm not ready to die yet. I'm, you know, this isn't your choice. This is my choice and God's choice. And I'm not ready to go yet. And, you know, I had wonderful people around me. My beautiful wife used to, you know, we weren't married at the time. She used to drive up from Long Island, New York, up to Massachusetts for all of my treatments. And she walked me through the whole thing. And I'll tell you, that chemo, I was doing experimental chemo, it's a rough ride.
Yeah.
And all I could think of when they told me how bad it was going to be, once I thought about what the alternative was.
Yeah, what's the alternative?
You,
right.
To me, death is a lot right. rougher
that
ride.
Sucks. Yeah. Ain't no coming back from that shit.
I'm like, you know what? I've been in a coma. I've broken, you know, I broke 17 bones in one shot. You know, I've had over 50 broken bones in my career, and they ain't got any chemo that's going to kick my ass. That's just not going to happen, you know. So bring it on. Let's see how tough it is. Let's see if I'm better than it is. And, you know, I can remember I had to crawl to the bathroom. You know, the first dose of chemo that I did, my wife and I didn't realize that it wasn't going to be the first day that was bad. She showed up, she took me to my first chemo treatment, and that was on a Thursday, and she stayed Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then, you know, I had a little pump that was feeding it into me up until Monday, and she had to leave on Sunday because she was a school teacher. She had to get back to, you know, teaching the children. And Monday was the worst day, and by Monday it was a tough ride. So after that, we kind of set it up so she stayed Monday and Tuesday, and then she left on, like, Tuesday night. By then, I had, you know, got myself hydrated and back doing okay again. But we pulled through it, and I'm 100% cancer-free, and it's just a deal where you just can't give up. It got tough, and at one time, you know, I got ready to throw in the towel. And I just want people to know that everybody gets to that point. Just don't give up, because my wife says, what do you want me to tell your son?
Right.
He wasn't worth fighting for.
Yeah, keep on pushing.
And I says, okay, let's keep going. That's how long it took. My wife has just been wonderful for me.
Yeah, family, I think, I mean, any kind of illness, anything like that. I mean, not just illness, but, I mean, family's everything. People around you, I think, go a lot further than, you know, a lot
kind of
people.
What's missing today is family morals and, you know, having meals together and talking over problems and issues, taking care of things before they become big problems. It's, the family's got to get back together again.
Amen to that, brother. So where are you off to now?
Well, we just came back from Naples, Florida. We went down to go see my brother-in-law. He got hurt jumping this summer, and he's still healing up, and we're on our way back home right now. It's Daytona, Florida right now.
So it's a family affair with the jumping and the thrills.
Well, what happened was he was just my friend for a long time, and we were jumping together for quite a while. And somehow or another, I ended up falling in love with his sister, and she ended up falling in love with me. And So he says, no, I ruined the family. But we ended up getting married, and now we go out and jump. We're both starting to get kind of old for this stuff, but I don't know. With me, I got a feeling God's going to give me the word when he says it's enough. You know, I didn't know if this last summer was it when I went down and I got hurt pretty bad. I got life flighted this summer with broken ribs and a punctured lung. I was having some second thoughts in the hospital, but you know,
that's a shitty way to get a helicopter ride, brother. I got to be honest with you.
Oh, they're not fun.
Is that the one where you went down in the rain with the, where you were just on the side of the?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't even rain. I hit my friend had told me he's done a million shows on drag strips, and he said, don't go through the water, because when you go through the water and then you hit the jet fuel from the jet cars, it's like ice. And I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And I was out there doing wheelies, and everything was good traction. And I kind of forgot about it. Like, I got so excited when I landed the jump. You know, I flew like 130 feet, landed the thing down, and I was going crazy. I pulled a wheelie coming back, and I went right through the water. Yeah. As soon as I put the front wheel down, it was like hitting ice, and the front end went out. Then my leather stuck to the track because it had the glue down for the drag strip. And I busted all the ribs on my left side, and one of them punctured my lung, and my lung collapsed.
This is on a celebratory wheelie on the way back from a successful jump.
After the jump.
Oh, man.
I watched it today.
Holy shit.
Yeah. That's why everybody keeps telling me to quit jumping. I don't got to quit jumping. I got to stop going back and waving to the crowd.
Make the jump and get the hell out of there. Yeah, I watched one today. You were, like, sparks were coming out of the rear of the bike. I don't know if it was fire or what, but.
No, that's pyrotechnics. We do that all the time.
Yeah, well, it definitely looked like you were at it. That was intentional. I wasn't suggesting that was the problem, but it didn't look like it didn't look like there was a whole lot of room to land, and it looked like you ran right into what looked like cattle chutes or cattle. Yeah, cattle chutes.
Oh yeah,
and it was in Pennsylvania.
When I got cancer, the doctors told my wife, "You have to tell him he's got to cancel his summer tour." And she says the only reason he's going to live through this is because of jumping. And I was like, I didn't know any of this was going on. So she says, I'm not telling him, we're not canceling the tour. And they said, he's not going to be able to hold on when he lands.
Pretty hardcore wife.
And that was one of the jumps I did right in the middle of chemo. And
Holy shit.
It was a little tiny jump. I just figured I'd be okay. I made the afternoon show. And then the evening show, we went to go do it.
You were on fire.
When I hit my hand. Well, my sparkler was going.
It was just a little jump. I was on fire. Oh, no, man.
What happened was when I hit, my hand came off the bars, it pulled the handlebars to the side, and I only had a little 8-foot chute to make it through after
landing. There was nothing left. Like, I'm telling you, man.
Yeah, I ended up hitting that fence there. I broke my collarbone and my thumb on that one.
Dude.
But we jumped a couple weeks later.
Oh, my God, man.
I work in an office. I sell things for a living. I wouldn't be back at work for a couple of weeks, man. I don't do any jumps whatsoever. But if I broke my collarbone,
things that Evel Knievel always stressed, and I took this to heart and learned this, and this is part of my personality because of Evel Knievel, is to me, when you give your word and you have the ability to go, you can't let fear step in your way. You got to go. And I had a contract to do another show in a couple of weeks.
Jesus.
And I wrapped myself up and healed up as much as I could. And we went out and we got the show in. And I continued. I had a whole tour that I had to do. Yeah, you got to remember that motorcycle jumpers, I make my money in 3 months out of the year. And what I don't make in the summertime, I'm broke in the wintertime. Yeah. It's like this summer, I had a really rough year. I crashed and I missed two shows because I was hurt so bad. And then I got rained out on 60% of the rest of them. So I come home this winter and it's struggling a little. You know, the money's not the best. Down here in Florida, I've been trying to get shows for the wintertime, and just everybody's got these huge permits they have to get down here, and nobody wants to do it.
It's because bridges keep falling on people down there.
Yeah, I'm sure it's getting harder and harder with insurances and all that. I mean, I'm sure people don't want you jumping over.
I carry insurance for this. It's not cheap.
It's on him, right.
But everybody's got to have insurance. You know, I get calls from all over the country. The problem is that in order for me to bring my, you know, my entire rig and all my equipment there, it's not cheap, and a lot of times the places can't afford it.
But, sure.
You know, I've got these great venues like, you know, the Buffalo Chip in Sturgis. You know, I did the world record jump there a couple of years ago. I jumped 22 cars on Evel Knievel's actual personal motorcycle.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I watched that.
You know,
I watched
he's
that
done
again.
A bunch of motorcycle jumps on, and it was, I jumped at over 22 cars and set the Harley world record on it.
Now,
and
how is that riding on a
Harley
Davidson?
Yeah, tell us the difference of like the difference on riding on one of Evel's bikes compared to like one of the dirt bikes.
Well, I think everybody knows, you know, one of the reasons Evel became so famous was he missed a lot.
Yeah, yeah, he said he never had a problem with the takeoff. It was the landing.
Yeah, it's well, that's where it always is. You know, I've never seen anybody crash on the takeoff. But it's a situation that as technology developed and they started coming out with the motocross bikes, these bikes are built from the factory to do jumps. I mean, motocross jumps, they're jumping 70, 80, sometimes 100 feet every lap.
Yeah.
And, I mean, these guys are just, they, you know, they're clicking them sideways and doing can-cans and knack-knacks and everything else. And, you know, with freestyle now, they're doing backflips and double backflips and everything. But like they developed these motorcycles for jumping,
yeah.
Basically.
Right.
And when you're on a Harley-Davidson, the bike that Evel was jumping is a flat-track motorcycle. And it's only meant to stay on the ground and go in circles. And
barely,
you know,
that
they're made for racing oval
circles
track.
Circles are still optional.
Yeah, well, when you come up short with no suspension, it pitches you right over the handlebars, and that happened to Evel several times. And I got on his bike, I did a couple of jumps on it, and after, you know, I had already made a commitment to do the jump, and I did my first couple practice jumps, and I went, I'm in trouble. I didn't think I had a chance of making it, but I learned to jump the motorcycle, and you know, there's a certain art to jumping that bike. It has to be done in a certain way, and there's only a handful of people in the world that know how to do that. And I'm one of them, and I'm fortunate enough that, you know, Latham McKay owns and Mike Patterson, they own the Evel Knievel Museum in Topeka, Kansas, and they have been kind enough to allow me to use that motorcycle to go set world records. You know, and I told Latham McKay to, you know, after I did that world record jump on Evel's bike out there at the Buffalo Chip in Sturgis, I told him, I said, you know, I could die tomorrow and I'd be a happy man. You know, I've completed most of my dreams. I've only got a couple of dreams left that I'm still working on for the motorcycle jumping. And, you know, just that one was one of the biggest ones I've ever had a dream of doing, and it was unbelievable.
That's pretty awesome, dude.
Yeah, that's actually how I heard about you, Doug. I went to the Evel Knievel Museum there in Topeka, and I did the 4D jump there that you recorded over the...
Oh, did you?
Oh, man, that was wild, man.
I'll tell you, I try to convince people of how cool it is. And, you know, and I initially, when they first told me it was all set up and everything, you know, I had to wear a helmet that was 15 pounds when I did that jump because it had all the cameras on it.
Yeah, I watched the video of it today. And
a couple watermelons cameras, on your head.
Yeah, it looked like the guy was actually had to help you with it. He like placed it on your head.
Yeah, I had to wear a helmet to put it on my head.
Yeah. Hold this up with your neck. while you ride around
on a
motorcycle.
While you jump 15 cop cars.
Yeah. Holy shit.
But anyways, I went out for the grand opening, and I got to go for the virtual reality ride. And when I got done, I had actually felt like I had done my first practice jump for the season because I went there, you know, I think it was in April or May. And it's just so realistic. It's unbelievable. I mean, people are leaning when the bike's turning, and you see everybody stand up just before the jump. It's incredible. People love it. If anybody ever wants to see what it feels like to do a motorcycle jump, go to the Evel Knievel Museum in Topeka, Kansas, and go for a ride, because it's exactly what it feels like.
Yeah, I had to put my feet down on the platform just to like assure myself that
you weren't actually there. Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
You know, the funny thing with that is, if when you get up in the air, if you turn your head and look to the left,
uh-huh,
the cameras are going to
and see what I would have seen if I would have turned my head to the
yeah,
left.
Right.
There.
With you.
You would have looked to the left and seen all the people, you know, yep. the crowd. There was, you know, several thousand people there. And it was really cool because I remember I did the virtual reality ride one time and I looked to the right and there's a big parking garage there. And every floor was packed with people there to watch the jump.
That's awesome.
You know, we had several thousand down on Main Street down there, whatever street it was that we were doing the jump on. And it was pretty cool looking up and seeing all these people that had, you know, gone up on the third, fourth, fifth floor of the parking center.
Yeah, that was definitely neat. I can't get enough of Evel Knievel since that museum.
We're starting to get worried as his friends and family, to be honest with you, Doug. As much as I marvel what you do and think it's awesome, Casey's getting a little concerning at home here. He was the pictures of him from the museum on Facebook got me a little alarmed. But that's all. I mean,
I'll tell you, once you go through that museum and you experience it lived through some of the things that Evel Knievel went through and how he handled a lot of situations, you can't help but be a fan of his.
Yeah.
And understand that he created a better era. In other words, when you're involved in wars that nobody's happy to be involved in and the country is downing, you know, the politicians and even frowning on our poor vets that went over there and fought for this country.
Sure.
And this guy, you know, he like kicked America in the ass and said, "Come on, people!"
Covered everything he owns in an American flag and went out fighting.
These are the greatest people we got. They keep us safe. Yeah. Don't spit on these people. These people are our heroes. And he turned the thinking in America completely around. And he made people, like I said, I try to do this. I do public speaking, and I try to do this that don't let fear stand in the way of you obtaining the goals in your life that you want to do. I've achieved some incredible goals in my life, and I've lived the dream of a life. I've had my nightmares, obviously, with the cancer and being in a coma for a month, and you know a couple of crashes that I've had. But the bottom line is, sometimes when you're taking the chances, you pay the price. But if you never swing the bat, you're never going to hit a home run. And you know, I'm always swinging that bat and I'm getting ready to hit my next home run. I can't wait. You know, that's how life is to me. Life is an adventure.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, I really we really appreciate you taking time out of your day. We'd be more than happy to maybe chat again with you another, you know, we record every Sunday. Sometimes I forget. But yeah,
well,
man.
Anytime you want to talk, you give me a
That's
yell
awesome, man. That was great. I mean, that was great. We have a lot of shit to talk to you about, to be honest with you. But we got a, I mean, you know, what do you got, Case? Do you want
to,
I mean.
I just wanted to get back to the Caesar's Palace jump. Was there any plans for you to ever jump the fountain?
Yeah, you know, the thing was, I tried to get in there. I had sent them all sorts of proposals, and I wasn't very well known at the time, and they just turned me down on it. And shortly after that, Robbie Knievel, you know, Evel got Robbie in there to do that. And then Robbie did a great job and pulled it off and made the fountains. And, you know, they had another guy that went there and did a backflip over the fountains. I don't know if you knew Gary Wells had jumped it and missed it after Evel missed it. So there was two people that had crashed. Gary Wells' crash was horrifying. If you ever get a chance, look that up on YouTube or something. And then once it was backflipped over, I gave up trying to do it again because I didn't see any need to do it again. And then just recently, Travis Pastrana did it. And they never even mentioned it. It had already been done twice.
Yeah. Yeah, but that dude flips Travis over everything, to be honest. That that guy's pretty amazing to watch in his own right. Pastrana,
Travis.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's in my eyes probably the greatest motorcycle jumper there is right now.
I mean, it just seems like anything he touches, he's good at. Not just motorcycles. The guy, anything he can make a stunt out of anything and make it, you know, the craziest damn stunt you've ever seen.
He has incredible talent. You know, some people just have the gift. You know, I don't really believe anybody was ever born with the gift. You know, I think that, like, I know myself, if anybody knew the amount of hours I spent on bicycles learning, you know, everything about what you can do on a bicycle, And then later on, I mean, every day I'd go to school and I'd go home and I'd go dirt bike riding. And I would learn what you could do with that bike and all the different things you could do in the air with it. And I was probably one of the first guys in the world that ever did a no-handed jump or a one-handed jump. And nowadays, the things they're doing are incredible. Right. You know, everybody says, oh, one-handed, big deal. Back in that day, I was doing 15-car jumps and waving to the crowd in the air. And you know, that was back in the 80s, and everybody was like, oh, my God, did you see that?
That's awesome.
So I see here, I'm reading that you started the Doug Danger Motorcycle Stunt Spectacular with Tim Chitwood. Is he related to Joey Chitwood?
Yeah, he was his brother.
Oh, okay.
We had a thrill show that went on for, I don't know, it was probably about 6 years, 7 years. Incredible show. Just unbelievable. But, we ended up losing Timmy Chitwood just recently. He was a great friend of mine. I love Timmy Chitwood. He was just a super person, and we ended up losing him. He ended up in the hospital, and he was pretty sick. He ended up dying from I think it was a stroke that got him. It was pretty sad. I hated seeing him go. He was pretty young.
Sorry to hear that, man. The reason I brought that up is in Jim's where Jim's grandmother lives, there is a guy by the name of Jan Murphy who was actually one of, I believe, Joey Chitwood Jr.'s hoodmen. One of the guys that would, hold on to the hood and drive through the
the human battering ram.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We used to, when I was with Joey Chitwood for 1 year, I did the whole tour, and then for about 5 or 6 years, they've got this really, really big fair up in Massachusetts called the Big E, Eastern States Exposition, and I did that show with them. It was 17 days, and we used to do 40 shows. We did three on the weekends, on each day on the weekend, and then two shows on the weekdays, and I spent a lot of time with those guys, and then I went with a show called the Jake Plumstead, Tony Peterson Hell Drivers, and we used to have so much fun on the road. We would leave in April, and the end of April, and we wouldn't get back until the end of October. And it was just an incredible life. We had so much fun. You know, when I had to do a big jump, I would have to take off a little bit of time and go do it. But when we were with those guys, we just traveled and had a ball.
That's awesome.
So are you still a record holder in any of the jumps?
Well, the footage record's been beat. I set the Guinness Book of World Records for footage back in 1991. I did 251 feet when I jumped over 42 cars, but still the most cars ever jumped in a line. And that was back in 1991.
Wow.
I just set the Harley World Record for jumping over cars. I did 22 cars on a Harley, and that's a record.
Was that the one at Sturgis?
Yeah.
The chip.
Yep.
Wow.
If anybody wants to see that one, Google Doug Danger Sturgis jump.
That was like two or three years ago, right?
I was fortunate enough to do it on Evel Knievel's 1972 Harley Davidson.
Wow, man.
Yeah. And there was no suspension to that bike.
My back would still hurt, dude. And I was reading, like, that's like 3 years ago. Like, you'd need to replace, like, my lower half to get me working again after landing. I rode around on a sport bike for a couple of years.
I got crossed up really bad on that one, and when it landed sideways, and when the bike snapped back, my elbow actually bent completely backwards.
Ooh.
So I still feel it.
That's crazy.
It was a hard hit, but we hung on, rode it out, and, you know, it's put the name in the record books again at 53 years old.
That's awesome, bro.
I'm pretty proud of some of the stuff I've done. I've had so many people that have sent me emails and, you know, posts on Facebook about, you know, that jump you did inspired me to go. I had one guy, he wanted to try Ultimate Fighting, and he went out and tried Ultimate Fighting. He was like 45 years old. He said he didn't want to try it because he was too old. And I encouraged him, and, you know, I inspired him to go try that. And, you know, I've had different people telling me that, that age has been their excuse to not do something. And after I did that, they realized they didn't have any excuses.
Right.
You know, they've gone and accomplished a lot of things. So that always made me feel great. You know,
it's awesome. That's great, man. Well, hey, like I said, thanks again for taking some time out of your day to talk to us, and hopefully some of our listeners are also inspired. I know it was really good talking to you. And
yeah, hopefully we can get back to the Buffalo Chip. I'd like to set another world record there before I get done. I'm 56 years old now, and you know the next run that they have out there at the Buffalo Chip's I'm gonna be 57 years old. And I still wanna set one more record out there.
How about
if we can get it done?
The Snake River Canyon's still there waiting for someone to.
Well, that's actually been done. Somebody did that. My friend Eddie Braun did it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was actually 2 years ago, I think it was. He had the designer that Evel Knievel had. His son, there was Bob Truex and Scott Truex were the two that designed those rockets. And they actually did the Snake River Canyon.
Oh, wow.
I actually think it was, I think it was since 2018. No, I think it was 2016.
Are you two talking about shooting somebody over a canyon with rockets? Are you out of your, like, more than just the power of the motor of the bike?
Rockets. Yeah, it was a, what kind of rocket was that? It was a steam-powered, right?
Steam rocket.
Yeah, steam.
Oh, no. Somebody said they put Olympia beer in there.
Awesome.
But we're talking with them right now. We've been talking for a little while. We're trying to get the funds built up because I want to do this the Grand Canyon, and that was Evel Knievel's original dream that he never got to accomplish, and I would like to finish that dream for Evel Knievel, you know. And the problem is it's with these rockets, it's huge money to get these things rolling. So if you have any listeners out there that might be interested in partaking in a world record jump over to Grand Canyon, look me up on Facebook.
If I know any of my listeners are rocket engineers, look me up too. I just want to chat. Well, man.
We got a rocket design. You know, we've got
that's amazing.
Truax has got it all done, ready to go. We just have to work together with him on it.
Yeah, he knows the designer already.
Oh, right.
He just needs the money to
pay for a rocket.
Yeah.
All right, right. Well, I could talk to my aunt. Well, hey, Doug, I really thank you very much. We're going to wrap up. You got anything else? Anything you want to end on?
Hey, I just want everybody to, if you have any dreams that you've ever wanted to obtain, don't let fear step in the way. Take it out and go for it, because life is short. You reach a certain age, and then you don't have the ability to do things anymore. Get it done while you still can. Life is great. It's a dream.
Right on, man. Well, hey, Doug, thanks again from Jim and from Casey. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much, man.
All right, man.
We'll reach out and
great talking with you guys.
We'll chat again in a couple weeks.
All right, sounds good.
All right, man. Take care of yourself.
Okay, you too.
Thank you. I forgot to hit record.
Shut up.
I'm kidding.
Doug Danger, everybody.
That was awesome.
Dude, I wouldn't I wouldn't even attempt a jump ever, but if I did and I broke one single
skin. Wait, back up. Time out. What are you jumping, first of all? Oh, like riding on a motorcycle?
Anything.
Have you ever ridden on a motorcycle?
I've been on.
Answer the question that I just asked you. Have you ever ridden, not sat on the motorcycle at the fucking museum? Have you ever got on a motorcycle with a key that started it that you could drive it around the fucking parking lot?
No. I've been on.
Okay, so let's not even discuss you jumping a fucking motorcycle, because it's the most ludicrous thing.
Theoretically.
Yeah. The chances of you breaking a fucking every bone in your body are about 99.999%. So I don't recommend even bringing this up theoretically.
I've only ever been on two motorcycles, as far as I can remember.
As a passenger.
One was with you when you picked me up to take me to the bank one time because I owed you money. And it wasn't even, it was like a small fucking crotch rocket that your fat ass was on, and then me.
Oh, that was so funny.
And the second time I was on a motorcycle was the one that was bolted down to the wooden ramps at the Evel Knievel Museum.
The one that Doug was just talking about.
Yeah. So other than that, no, I've never been on or ridden a motorcycle. But I'm saying if I was a motorcycle rider and I decided to do a jump of any sort and I would break.
Dude, so few people that ride motorcycles jump them. I don't even know why you're having this. Of course you would stop after you broke every bone in your body. Because you'd probably be dead or in a coma for a month. Like, dude, Doug.
Yeah, I wanted to ask him about that.
A fucking
month. He was in a coma for a month, and then he had amnesia.
We're talking to him again.
He had amnesia.
I like that. That was fun. That was a good chat.
Very good.
I didn't know how you figured out who he even was until you told me it during the interview that the museum guy. Not a whole lot going on there in Topeka, Kansas, is there?
No, but
thank God you're a fucking Evel Knievel fan.
I was watching a video about it today, actually, about the museum, and I didn't realize the his tractor trailer that they completely redid that I was telling you about.
Yeah,
they actually built the building around that.
You know, if you unscrew the back of the tractor trailer and slide it out. There's a flask with John. I'm just
kidding. No, the original ramps are, his original ramps are in there.
Really?
Yeah.
So before we talked to Doug, I did watch a bunch of his videos yesterday, and we were sending them back and forth.
Uh-huh.
He's done some pretty crazy shit. And he sounds very sane and normal.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't sound like a guy who would light himself on fire and then hop on a motorcycle.
No, and I wanted another thing. We are going to have to talk to him again because I wanted to ask him. He is a motivational speaker and
talks about
staying sober and not using any drugs or alcohol. I wanted to ask him if he was if he had a problem or why.
Oh, that's a great question to ask somebody.
Well, he's a motivational speaker, and he
maybe it's about the being a cancer survivor or setting himself on fire and jumping motorcycles.
If you read his website, it says about living a sober life.
I don't stalk our guests until after I speak to them. Usually.
Go Doug. I think it's Doug-Danger.com or. YouTube.
He's more concerned that you're outliving your life than checking up on his. That's the kind of guy I like to talk to. He doesn't care. He didn't plug himself. He's just doing his thing, which just happens to be crazy shit that I could never do.
Maybe.
I could do it, and it's not that I'm afraid of it, Doug. I'm not afraid. I heard you talk about it. I'm not afraid to set myself on fire and jump a motorcycle. I just know exactly how bad it's going to hurt to land. That's all. That's all. So what else is new, dude? We got to talk a little bit. I missed you. I missed you. It's been like 3 months.
It's been 2 weeks.
It's felt so
there
long.
Were some things, but I mean, I think it would be better when there would be other people here.
Well, I can't help it that your friends didn't show up. This is our thing. I've started sober December.
While you started sober mostly, December, I've started the
because you
let's
had
forget December hashtag. I don't know
what
hashtag. Let's forget December.
I don't understand.
Well, because now I'm smoking again.
All right. Do you want to go over to Luigi's with me?
I do not. I have a lot of stuff to do.
It's Open Hoos.
I know.
It's Open Hoos.
It was last week. So, one thing that
it's today, you asshole.
One thing that if you notice, I'm drinking Diet Coke, which I usually drink Diet Coke.
Yeah, I don't care, but okay.
Well, people say that
aspartame,
it's bad for you,
right?
Well, last week when I was in Arizona, some lady when I was checking out at the Home Depot, I always get a Diet Coke before I leave. She said, "You shouldn't drink Diet Coke. You know, it's not good for you." I said, "Well, it's better than the regular Coke with the high fructose corn syrup, you know." And she said, "Well, that aspartame is like poison." I said, "Well, I guess I like poison then."
This is the woman who works at Lowe's?
Home Depot. Yeah.
At the cash register.
At the cash register.
Giving you medical advice on the drink that you're buying from the store that she's working at a cash register at. That's interesting.
She said, "Well, that's like poison." I said, "Well, I guess I like poison then."
Don't talk bad about her job. We're going to fucking lose people.
She said, Well, my mom died from it. So right at that moment, then a guy, an older gentleman, came up from behind us, and I could tell that he was in a hurry.
He was on his way to a funeral.
He was in a hurry, and he handed her his. He said, "This is my military ID. I get a discount, right?" And I just turned to him, "Thank you for your service," and I booked it out.
Probably like, what the fuck?
My mom died from it. So, a couple weeks ago now, your grandmother ordered a new headboard from Pier 1.
Okay.
And Barbara and I had to go pick it up.
Okay.
When it came in.
Uh-huh.
So, you know where Pier 1 is, right?
Uh-huh. I don't know what my grandmother's headboard was. I wouldn't expect, like, it's just a bizarre statement to make. You know, your grandmother ordered a new headboard.
Well, I took her bed apart and took it to Baltimore. And then she got a new bed.
Okay.
And she ordered...
You say that like you're doing me a favor by taking her bed to Baltimore.
I'm not saying it in any way. Like, I'm just saying. I'm telling you. And you make a fucking big deal about it. I said, your grandmother ordered a new headboard, and then you have this fucking look on your face like...
Why do I care?
Because I'm getting to a story, Jim. I'm getting to a story.
Can you pour a little poison in there for me? Oh, aspartame me
so
up. Yeah, I'm listening.
We get to the Pier 1, and we have to wait out back. It's cold outside. And they load us up. I have to strap the headboard down in the bed of the truck because it's a little longer than the bed of the truck. Drive from Pier 1 to your grandmother's house. Take it, unstrap it from the back of the truck. Take it inside onto the elevator. And I see on the tag, this is for deliver to Helen Smith.
Oh, Helen Smith.
Yeah.
That's late Mr. Smith's wife. She just died the other day. Her daughter works at Home Depot.
Helen Smith. So we
go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm trying to think about poor Helen, who this week had to bury her husband, who died of aspartame poisoning and lost her headboard. I'll have to send the Schmitz
flowers.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Schmithy.
Sorry, Schmith.
So, we call Home Depot, or call Pier 1. They say, oh, we apologize. So we take it back. And Barbara says, no, don't say anything to him. I said, oh.
Because she knows how you get.
I'm going to say something. So.
What could you have said?
I just said, the lady said, oh, I'm really sorry about that.
That's not enough.
Well, so, I said, well, sorry doesn't.
Go ahead. What did you tell her? What bomb did you drop on her?
I said, well, sorry doesn't save me the time and effort I just spent taking that and bringing it back. And then I just,
literally 2 miles. It was.
That's not the point.
What
if I would have drove to Lancaster with that headboard and then got to Lancaster?
I still wouldn't care at all.
Well, nobody takes responsibility anymore. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Did she? Was it her fault?
Yes.
No. Then I.
They loaded it onto the truck.
Should have punched her right in the face. I would have taught her a lesson. Would have taught you one too.
Always check your product before you leave.
Yeah. Why didn't you?
Well, because I didn't think it was my responsibility. Since I don't fucking work at Pier 1.
You're taking it though.
Yeah.
So it becomes your responsibility at that point.
After it leaves the building, yeah.
Right. So it's on you that you got all the way back to Nanny's before you realized it was the wrong headboard. I would think you would inspect it before you just bring it home. Oh, this huge piece of wood you just want me to throw? Okay, yep.
They're expected to do their
job.
Yeah,
it's got
correctly.
Some old lady's name on it. Yeah, that's right. Ann or Helen or something.
Helen Schmidt.
I could understand if it was anybody but the Schmidts.
All right. I know Jeff would agree with me.
Says nothing.
All right.
Where's Vu?
He has gout.
Doesn't
oh. Mean. So, since you and I are the founders of this show, it's one-on-one today.
Well, it's really, yeah, it's our show.
Right. How would you feel about once a month?
Absolutely not.
Being on Berks County Television.
No.
Why?
No fucking way.
Why?
Are you fucking out of your mind?
Why?
Are you drinking out of your cane flask?
No.
Are you doing heroin out of your cane
no.
flask? Do you, look at me.
Well, you're slimming down. I see you lost about
slimming down?
3 pounds.
I'm probably looking better because I haven't drank all week.
Well, I guess that we'll have to take a vote then when everybody's here, since it's a one-on-one, it's a deadlock.
Okay.
You say no?
They're
interested.
I don't give a fuck. What do you mean be on TV? We have to be somewhere else?
Yeah. Once a month.
No.
For live Saturdays with Chicken Bone.
No fucking way in hell.
Come on.
No, call it something else. Nope, not my name.
Come on.
No.
Why?
Because. Live. Are you fucking high?
Yes.
Not enough. Come on.
You'll think about it. He'll think about it, folks. The people want it.
Why can't we? Who watches BCTV?
Well, that's...
No one. Literally, no one. The only reason you have it is because you probably don't care that you have it. Like,
have what?
BCTV. Have you ever watched BCTV
every
in your
week.
Life?
Dance Party USA.
I don't even think that's on anymore, is it?
No, I think Phil died.
Oh, Phil's. I know Phil's dead. Years.
All right. Well...
Let's talk about Venom.
Amber
and how
from BCTV. She emailed me twice.
What about what?
About being on there.
Like to what capacity? Like just random. Like, there, what spot would we be on?
We like just, Saturday night sometime, and we could take phone calls like that Doug Danger phone call. I mean, that would be.
Oh, I mean, people would be lined up around the block, probably to see that. Live
or they, watch it.
Yeah,
might get
they
BCTV.
They'd be lined up around the block to get into somebody's house with cable to watch fucking BCTV. That's probably coming in on channel 30.
They might get more viewers on for BCTV if we have a Saturday show. We gain more listeners during for our podcast during the other month.
So terrible of an idea.
Maybe no. Me and Vu will be on.
Yeah, do Vu's clues.
Vu's clues. Okay, so next
what's
week.
What's it actually called? Vu's.
Gil's Gone Wild.
Gil's Gone. Vu's Clues.
Next week, Kim Cavana. Are we recording next week because of the party after? It's going to be the day after.
Are we the party's a Friday.
No, party's Saturday. Mm-hmm. December 8th.
That's Friday.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you're right. Today's the 2nd. Like yeah. Devin just told me the wrong information.
So, are we going to record next week? Because I have to tell Kim.
I mean, why wouldn't we?
Well, because it's the day after the party.
I'm not drinking.
Okay.
So, I don't care.
You're not going to drink at the party?
Probably not.
Okay.
Okay? Is that okay with you?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So, Kim will be here next week. The following week, we'll have Kyle, Wool, Clyde. Winner of the No Phony Podcast Network. Just say November Challenge. Go to chickenduckpod.com. Sign up.
I'd like to talk about how you are not nearly as excited about that anymore now that you didn't win the belt.
Oh, dude. They fucking blew me out of the water.
Do you want me to get you a belt for Christmas?
I mean, that would be pretty cool.
Oh, no.
Can we have a Saturdays with Chicken Duck belt?
I mean, yeah, we could wear it our one Saturday of fucking month at BCTV.
For the month of November, Kyle Wohl had 655,000 steps.
That's a lot, dude. Steps.
He has a treadmill in his living room. He just fucking, he wanted this belt. He wanted it. And he lost a lot of weight this year. He lost 60 pounds this year.
He might have lost 60 pounds this month. That's a lot of fucking steps.
I said this year. 60 pounds this year. I don't give a
fuck what you said.
Oh God, I don't care. I had 368,000 steps.
That's a lot. What did I have?
You haven't updated in 10 days, but as of 10 days ago, you had 52,000.
At least I'm mobile. Like, I'm not sitting
barely.
At least I'm not sitting in a fucking office chair and having them wheel me around with a broom.
I'll wash myself right on his dick. All right.
Is that really it?
Yeah, man. We've been going for over an hour.
Okie doke. Well.
We'll talk about Venom next week. I got to watch it again.
You don't. It's really not that good. I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, Marvel is just get it. Go ahead. Go ahead. Do whatever you want. Make whatever you want. Oh, you want explosions and shit? A fucking pile of mass that just talks to everybody?
I don't know how you...
Why did it have a British accent?
I don't know.
It was really fucking weird, man.
I don't know. I thought it was good. It was.
And were there, like, is there a, are there two Venoms? One of them not named Venom?
You mean it for the end? The very end?
The guy that he was fighting. Were we watching a different movie?
I'm not sure.
Like, I thought Venom was Spider-Man somehow.
No.
Venom and Spider-Man weren't ever...
I don't think so.
All right, well, we'll be looking.
I don't know. I'm not a big Marvel guy. I don't know a bunch about Marvel, especially not about Spider-Man.
Well, by default, you know more than I do, so...
But I don't know how you're going to do it, but you have to check out DC Universe's show called Titans.
Ooh.
Dude, it's awesome. It's so good. It's Robin.
Okay. Like Batman and Robin?
Yeah, but it's Robin.
Why are you so excited about Robin?
It's awesome, dude.
Okay. It's not like Jeremy Renner, is it?
I don't know who the character is. It's all people you've never heard of. But it's an R-rated show. It's really good.
Really? Really good?
Really good. So you're going to want to check that out. Subscribe to DC Universe. It's only $8.99 a month. All right. Wrap us up.
All right, everybody. Join us next week. We are having our number one Patreon come in, Kimmy Cavanna-Curlin. Be nice to chat with her. Haven't seen her, I don't know, a couple
years.
I'm hoping the rest of our show gets back so it's not just Casey and I boring you to death. And Mike Buschetti's going to call in and give us a shout-out. All right, it's been emotional. Goodbye.